Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Joining me in the studio is Hilary Letwin. You are the Manager of Cultural Services
for the City of Coquitlam.
Excellent. And we're here to talk about the Enhanced Outdoor Spaces Program that Coquitlam is launching for 2025, or continuing.
Yes, it's really more a matter of continuing. The Streetscape Enhancement Program was established in 2023, and it's been a great way to beautify our streets in Coquitlam.
What are you talking about when you're talking about enhanced streetscapes?
So the work that we've been doing in this program is we've taken a multi-pronged approach to beautifying our streets. Some of the work that my team has been doing within cultural services focuses on the murals that we've mm-hmm. been painting around the city, but we have staff from many different departments involved in this program, including our parks department as well as engineering and public works. In fact, yep. the whole program started in engineering and public right. works, and it started as an opportunity for the city to partner with local businesses because we're always looking for ways to strengthen those ties. Mm-hmm. And so my colleagues, our team, went out into the community and started to talk to businesses about ways in which we can enhance the streets around the city. And some ideas included the mural painting that yeah. I mentioned, as well as what we're calling artful street furniture.
Right.
So those are sort of benches that go a little bit beyond the standard city bench, which encourage people to gather in outdoor spaces and ideally in commercial areas. That's where mm-hmm. that business connection yeah. comes in. And then we also have been enhancing the tree lighting, the street lighting in trees right. around various commercial zones in Coquitlam.
Right.
And so all three of these sort of approaches have been really successful at helping people to appreciate our streetscapes.
So what are some of the projects that people might recognize moving around Coquitlam that you've completed already or have substantially started?
So a few things that people may have recognized in their sort of going about the city of Coquitlam include lighting around the city center area. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are familiar perhaps with our Lights at Lafarge program yeah. that our parks team does at Lafarge Lake every year. So our streetscape enhancement program allowed us to do tree lighting outside of Lafarge Lake, but in that area, in that commercial zone, looking at Pine Tree Way mm-hmm. and Glen, for example, in that area. We also did some tree lighting in Maillardville yeah. On Brunette Avenue. And the whole purpose of that is just to make things a little bit more inviting, a little bit more welcoming. I, for one, as a resident of Coquitlam, really love driving around and seeing those lights and those trees, especially when it gets dark so early and can be so dreary outside.
It does really cheer things up on a cold winter night, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So the lights are one project that people might have noticed. I think our murals are probably another project yeah. that Coquitlam residents will have noticed as well. Part of this program has been trying to focus on different parts of the city, not just sort of focusing in on one part of the mm-hmm. city. So we have some murals that we have... we actually, in 2023 and 2024, we started with murals in the Maillardville area. Mm-hmm. So if you drive down Brunette Avenue, you'll see some beautiful murals along there. And then in 2024, we did three new murals. Those include a very significant mural on the north side of the city center branch of the library, the Coquitlam Public Library. And that mural is by Vancouver-based artist Carolyn Wong. And it's very appropriately called Paperback Dream. So totally on point for mm-hmm. the exterior of a library building. And that mural is so striking and has received some really positive feedback within the community. So that's one mural that people may have seen recently.
So what are your plans for this coming year?
Well, we have a few more projects to deliver that have been in the works. So we're going to be unveiling a new mural on the, there's a wall on the Anthem development by in South Coquitlam. It's just in a new building off of North Road. And the wall is highly visible from Highway 1, especially if you're heading westbound.
Right.
So we will be soon unveiling a new mural on that wall that is by a Vancouver-based artist named Sarah Delaney. It's an abstract design, so a little bit different from a lot of the figurative murals that we've been producing recently, and will hopefully be a really interesting way for people to think about arts and culture in Coquitlam as they're driving by on in this particular area.
How do you choose the artists?
We work from a list of artists who responded to a call for the program. And we are lucky to have artists from various different types of experience. As you can imagine, not all walls are created equal. Mm-hmm. Some walls are fairly small, especially if we're working with a local business in one of our commercial zones. They may have a smaller wall that requires maybe a little bit less experience from a mural artist, as opposed to large walls like that wall that I mentioned on the north side of the library, which is quite a significant wall and required the use of a scissor lift to be able to paint. It took the artist about 2 weeks to do. Mm-hmm. So we have amazing artists in the Vancouver area, many of whom actually went through programs like the Vancouver Mural Fest and learned how to do mural painting, which is it does take some good technical skill, as you can imagine. So we've got a great list of artists who responded to a call that we put out a few years ago who we are working with for a lot of these projects.
Tell me a bit more about the fun street furniture.
The artful street furniture. As I say, we're really looking for those connections with the local business community, and we've been fortunate to be able to work with the Austin Heights Business Improvement Association to design some benches that are going to get installed in the Austin Heights area of Coquitlam. And those benches are really sort of riffing on the mid-century modern design that typified that kind of commercial stretch. Yeah. I don't know if you remember the old Safeway up there, but that was a classic, I think, 1960s building. And so the new benches that we're putting in at Austin Heights pay homage to that kind of boogie architecture of style of architecture, and also are using the colors that typify not only that period of time, but also the work of the Austin Heights BIA. So those benches will be coming very soon. We've also installed some pretty fun bike racks, one in Burquitlam, just at the Burquitlam SkyTrain station, and a second outside the City Center branch of the library. Those are getting lots of attention. We're also going to be installing a sort of multi-activation at the corner of Hobbs and Clark in the Burquitlam area of Coquitlam, where we've worked with some artists named Studio Hoisinga, who have created some really cool seating that plays on the tradition of giving a hostess flowers as a hostess gift. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be getting installed soon.
So what do you mean when you're talking about activation?
So these are sort of more passive activations. The benches and murals and ground murals in some cases. But of course, we're also looking within our team to bring these spaces to life as well. We will be shortly announcing details of different ways in which we're enlivening these spaces. So something we're looking at is perhaps bringing some buskers into those spaces. Basically, we want to encourage people to use these sites to sit and to gather obviously not in the middle of February in the snow as it is right now, but in the finer weather months, we're hoping that people will use these spaces.
What are some of the challenges with that? Because it's not as easy as just putting some benches down.
No, absolutely. So we are looking really carefully at the sites themselves. We want to make sure that they're places where people will logically want to sit. Yeah. We also are looking really to sort of utilize these enhancements that we've been putting in as encouragement to welcome people to those spaces.
What kind of feedback and response have you got from the community?
We've received really positive feedback from people who have mostly noticed the murals and the way in which we're enlivening these spaces. Mm-hmm. And we're excited for people to see what we have coming up.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a really, really great program. Is it a challenge? You know, Coquitlam's, you know, a municipality that's got multiple centers. It doesn't have a single hub. How does that present a challenge to your work?
So we're really looking within the program to enhance multiple neighborhoods around Coquitlam. Coquitlam has not just the city center area, but also Burquitlam, Austin Heights, Maillardville. So we've tried to take a balanced approach to considering these different neighborhoods and locating these murals and this sort of enhancement work in different parts of the city.
Great. Well, people can look around the community to see what's happening. Obviously, the lights are perhaps one of the most high-profile things at this time of year. Where can they find out more information if they're looking for it?
So we have a web page on the City of Coquitlam's web page devoted to the Streetscape Enhancement Program. Yeah. You can find more information about the program there. And then if you're looking for specific details about the murals, you can go to the public art page and find more details about the murals that have been created as a result of this program.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming in to speak to us about this today. Hilary Letwin is the Manager of Cultural Services for the City of Coquitlam. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Magnus. It's been a pleasure.
This is Bird Note. If you've ever seen the gargantuan bill of a northern shoveler, you know exactly how this dabbling duck got its name. Both males and females bear the unmistakable trowel-shaped bill, but they differ in plumage. Females and non-breeding males are a mottled beige color, but during the breeding season, male shovelers sport a bright white breast, reddish-brown flanks, and an emerald-green head that can rival any mallard's. Breeding pairs mate for life. In North America, they raise their young from Alaska to northern portions of the lower 48 before flying to their wintering grounds as far south as Hawaii, Central America, and the Caribbean. When they take off, you may get a glimpse of the male's sky blue shoulder pads that are only visible in flight. Northern shovelers are social birds that often forage together in large flocks. Look for them in shallow ponds where they swim in synchronized circles, stirring up tasty invertebrates and crustaceans from the muck with their iconic spatula of a beak. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is dedicated to Bob Goodale, whose lifelong love for birds and nature continues to inspire.
Cooperatives and Mutuals Canada is honored to host the annual CMC Congress from June 10 to June 12 at the Hotel Saskatchewan in Regina, Saskatchewan. Under this year's theme, The Future is Co-op, join us for thought-provoking plenaries and participate in interactive workshops and breakout sessions. To learn more or register, please visit www.canada.coop now.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nazarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. A group of researchers at Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, BC, are using archaeology as a means of Indigenous reconciliation and heritage protection. The Hoyatai Laskiti Archaeology Project, also known as XLAP, is working towards advancing reconciliation among the indigenous and settler populations of Laskiti Island, which is a remote island located off the east coast of Vancouver Island in the Strait of Georgia. Starting in 2021, XLAP is continuously being worked on by a community of volunteers and researchers from both indigenous and settler communities, as well as indigenous knowledge holders from Comox Nation, Tohamen Nation, Wiwakum Nation, Kualakum Nation, and Halalt Nation. Recently, a talk on XLAP was hosted by Dana Lipovsky, a professor of archaeology at SFU, leader of the XLAP project, and a resident of Laskiti, as well as project leader and professor of resource and environmental management, Sean Markey. CJSF attended the event and spoke with Lipovsky and Markey about the ways in which they believe this project has been able to honor, respect, and protect indigenous heritage in Laskiti. One of the main ways that they've been able to achieve this has been through public outreach and education. Until recently, it was widely believed by the residents of Laskiti that there was no indigenous heritage or presence on the island. According to Lipovsky and Markey, this research project has undoubtedly dispelled this myth.
And I should say that I'm a resident here. I was a part-time resident for many decades and now a full-time resident. So I have been kind of slowly working away at talking to people about Indigenous history and to break down that myth of First Nations were never here permanently. Okay, they came here to collect resources, but they certainly didn't live here full time. There weren't very big numbers. You know, there was a lot of that same kind of truce going around, but slowly, surely over the decades of working with community members and going to fall fairs and commute and to the market and giving talks, many people started to realize that, oh yeah, really, this doesn't make sense. And we're so happy to embrace it. But even with that, it was just kind of slow baby steps forward. And I was surprised that when we launched our project we got the funding, well, you know, in the same month that everything shut down around COVID, I was surprised that even given me doing this for decades and living here and being known to people and having pretty widespread group of friends, that people still didn't know. So it took this kind of massive amount of effort on the project team's part to actually, now no one can say they haven't heard it. Some people still don't believe it, but everybody has heard it and most people embrace it.
Afterwards, Sean Markey expanded on the planning and policy aspect of the research project.
You know, this is where the planning and the policy piece comes in, is that those two systems have also done nothing really to educate people, to make information available to people. There's nothing, for example, you know, there should be, and there's sort of, as I articulated in the talk, there is good policy in place about, you know, what it's illegal to disrupt Indigenous heritage and those types of things. But in terms of its presence and ready access to information about where sites are, incorporating knowledge about sites and what it means to have a site on property within the real estate process, for example, is all pretty much completely absent and very much, again, just simply reflective of those colonial myths and colonial systems that are in place to really not value it. And as I mentioned in the talk, it has really sort of more seen Indigenous heritage as a barrier to facilitating the development and something of value in its own right.
Later on in the discussion, Lipovsky emphasized the importance of Indigenous communities and knowledge holders playing a leading role in archaeological research such as this.
And it shouldn't happen. This is the thing, is that archaeology is this extraordinarily privileged position, as is planners who get to make or enact different policies around Indigenous heritage. We're the outsiders. It's not our heritage. So it's kind of it's a funny position in a way. So it's a privilege to be able to talk about planning and archaeology of someone else's heritage. And so it can't happen. It shouldn't happen. It would be silly for it to happen without, a partnered endeavor.
Since this research project focuses primarily on Laskiti or Hoyatai, We decided to ask Dana Lepofsky if she could explain how similar research could be utilized to advance Indigenous reconciliation in somewhere such as Burnaby.
I believe really strongly in the power of archaeology, and it's been an archaeological part of the archaeological culture with some good reasons to actually keep like where archaeological sites are private, because a couple bad actors will always come in and do some damage and trespass and dig up things. And so it's meant that the public doesn't really know or see archaeology. But I think they want to. So over all the years, every time I've done an excavation, one of the criteria that I have when I'm working with community members is we can go anywhere in your territory you want, but I also want to do something that's very public, that's very accessible. And I sometimes even design my excavation units so that, I've done this quite a few times, so that people can gather around them. So it's safe, like easy access and easy viewing, because I believe in the power of archaeology to change. And it's not just for settlers, it's for Indigenous youth as well. When you see this colonial landscape with manicured lawns and gardens and stuff, it's hard to know unless someone helps you see that right below their feet is like, you know, thousands of years of their own history. So I talk about kind of teaching people to have archaeology eyes. So in Burnaby, easy. Like, you know, we could pick a place. And every time we've done this, like I always say to my husband, oh, no one's going to come, you know, no press are going to come. But anyway, after all these years, I think I'd know, but so wrong. People come in droves. They want to know. People love archaeology. They're drawn to it, even if they don't necessarily yet jive with the truth around Indigenous history. They still love the archaeology. There's a cool factor. Actually, we have a student who's doing interviews about that. Like, what is it about that we're drawn to around the material objects and the like? So I would say what we're doing here has parallels in so many places, and many places are doing this. It helps here because it's an island, so it's easy. It's contained. We know our audience, but in the Fraser Valley where I've worked and other places, it's the same story. People will come. You just need to make it open and available and inviting, and you need to keep at it, and you need to make sure that to really make systemic change, you need to work with the policy folks. You need to, in Burnaby, like you need to work with the municipality in Burnaby, do the exact same thing, have public archaeology, have people come, have people participate, work with the teachers. It's all the same playbook, really.
Lastly, Sean Markey expanded on this sentiment and explained how local governments could be doing more to collaborate with local Indigenous communities.
I would add, I mentioned the talk just as a planner. I'm somewhat familiar with what archaeology is, but I had no real true appreciation for how powerful it can be to mediate conversations in the present. In addition to that engaged archaeological approach that Dana was just talking about, I witnessed, really powerfully firsthand within the XLAP project, the power of building relationships, of just gathering together with settlers, with nations. Some of the fear drops away, right? The fear of doing the wrong thing, for example, which I know can inhibit a lot of local governments from just simply reaching out. They're worried about offending or doing the wrong thing, or they don't know how. A common response that I hear from nations is, well, you could phone and ask, right? So, I think, creating pathways where settlers can interact with nations and learn about their history is incredibly powerful.
Once again, you were listening to Dana Lepofsky and Sean Markey, two leading researchers, a part of the Huayatai Lascidi archaeology project that is working towards using their archaeological findings to educate the island's residents on its Indigenous history, as well as foster and advance Indigenous reconciliation on Lascidi. Once again, this has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Here we go with Riff 1.
you ever get the feeling that there's something come undone and unreeling in the seaming, the stitching gone? So you rip a little harder till that rip becomes a run. Feel the fabric of existence come unspun. Hey there, we don't care. I could be standing way out where you're naked and freezing till you run.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvitarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Earlier this February, the Multilingual Orientation Service Association for Immigrant Communities, or MOSAIC, recently opened a new community clinic in the Edmonds area of Burnaby, BC, which aims to serve newcomers to Canada, people who identify as First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, new mothers and their babies, people living with complex mental health issues, and people experiencing homelessness or precarious housing. To learn more about the healthcare services that the new MOSAIC Community Clinic would provide, CJSF got in contact with Dr. Baldev Sangera, a longitudinal care-providing family physician in Burnaby, the medical director of the Prime Care Medical Center and the Edmonds Urgent Care Center, as well as one of the leading physicians involved with designing the community clinic. During our discussion, Sangera spoke about the unique services the clinic would provide, as well as his belief that clinics such as these not only benefit those directly